Well, we are a small and intimate group again today. A few people out, quite a number, in fact, which, although we'd like to see a bigger crowd, it works okay for me today because I am going to speak to you as if we were all gathered around the table in the back in a small, intimate setting. I struggled this week to try to come up with a topic that I wanted to speak on, and the week got away from me, got by me, so I just sat down last evening and scribbled a few bullet notes on a piece of paper, and it turned into several pieces of paper, and just finished it up this morning, so I don't know exactly which way we're going to go. I don't think we'll go much over sermonette time, but I wanted to sort of jump off of something that Mr. Kubik said last week in the video sermon. That sermon was given, I guess, two Sabbaths ago, and it created quite a stir and a lot of interest and on a lot of the social pages on the internet, and they decided to go ahead and play it. And there was something he brought up in that sermon that I wanted to expand on a little bit. I think it needs expanding on a little bit. Others will do it more apt and able than I am, but I thought that's what my mind was on this week. That's what I thought we'd talk about today. He talked about a firm that they had, I guess, hired to come into the home office and do a study. I don't know, you know, have all the details, the minutia of why it was the study was made or the final things that came out of it. That's, you know, in the corporate level of things, not any interest to me necessarily. But they did come out with a phrase that he said that this was what, in all their interviews with, I guess, the home office employees, or reading our literature, reading the magazine, seeing the Beyond Today television program and all those things, the study that after looking at the whole organization, I guess on a corporate level and also throughout the church wide, they came up with what they called a brand for the church. And they came up with the phrase that we were all about building relationships. Building relationships. And then the council wisely, I think, inserted, no, it's not just building relationships, it's building godly relationships. And that was wise for them to do that because, you know, anyone, the unconverted mind even, can build meaningful relationships. Families who are very, very close, who are close families, they uphold family values, they uphold their understanding of God and the Bible and scriptures, and they do a very good job of holding their families together because they raise their children that way. They have close familial relationships. We can have that with friends. In the work environment sometimes. Social clubs, fraternities can all have close personal relationships that are close, that are lasting, that are good for society. Even an unconverted mind can do that. But we are about godly relationships, aren't we? It takes the mind of God to build godly relationships. That's the starting point. That is where we start in building godly relationships. We start with our relationship with God. So we must first build a strong, solid, spiritual relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. And that is our starting point towards building godly relationships in the Church of God. A lot of relationships, we know, you know this as well as I do, a lot of relationships go awry when the proper spiritual foundation isn't laid in the Church of God. I'm speaking of godly relationships. A lot of relationships that should be godly, should be lasting, they go awry, they break down, they go wrong because the proper spiritual foundation is not laid. Let's turn over to James 4. We just went through this in Bible study recently. Very interesting series of Bible studies through the book of James. If you weren't able to be here, they're all recorded on the computer, and you can get copies of that if you like. Might want to put your request for a copy in advance so, you know, one person won't be trying to copy two or three dozen CDs after services. James 4, in verse 1, James says, "Where do wars and fights come from among you?" Now, as Mr. Dobson was talking about, he is speaking here to the 12 tribes who are scattered, and the areas where we think, or scholarship thinks, they were scattered to in here. There were actually fighting, physical fighting wars going on. But this also applies to us spiritually, and I probably primarily spiritually. He says, "Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your members from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and you do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask," because that relationship with God is not there. And he goes on to say, "You do ask, but you don't receive," again, because you ask amiss that you may spend it on your pleasures. The relationship with God is not there. And then he says in verse 4, "Adulterers and adulteresses." These are spiritual adulterers and adulteresses. "Do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." Strife in the church of God, brethren, the very thing that prevents us from building strong, godly relationships, oftentimes happens when we bring the world and the things of the world into the church, the attitudes of the world we bring into the church. And that affects all of us. It's not, you know, no man, as the saying goes, no man is an island. What we bring into the church of God personally affects the whole of the body. So a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. So how can this person who is a spiritual adulterer and bringing all kind of ungodly things in the church of God, how can he build godly relationships? Because doesn't have that personal relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. That relationship has to be maintained, has to be built first before we can start on any other meaningful, godly type relationship. Because it comes through the power of the Holy Spirit working in each of us. So our beginning point is having a strong spiritual relationship with God starts with having that relationship with God and Jesus Christ. That is our starting point to all of this. That type of godly relationship is not only possible, brethren, but it is expected of you and me. It's expected of God's people. It's not optional. In other words, this is what God expects. Let's go to John 17. We read this a lot at Passover, and I've read it several times speaking since the Passover, because it's so filled with things that we all need to know and keep in the front of our minds. John 17, verse 21. Let's start in verse 20. Jesus prays for all believers is the heading above this part of the chapter. He says, "I do not pray for these alone," the disciples that were there with him on that last evening, on that Passover evening. "I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through their word." That reaches all the way down to you and me and all the others who are out there, who are waiting and who are yearning and who are looking for the truth of God, although they might not know it. He says, verse 21, "that they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they may also be one in us." Notice the next part of the verse, "that the world may believe that you sent me." Okay, so we are to be one with each other. We are to have these godly relationships. It's what he's talking about. Being one with each other through the power of the Holy Spirit that permeates our lives. And is that invisible spirit that works in each of us. He prays for this to the Father, so I'm taking from that it is possible and expected for us to be that way. But that last phrase, "that the world may believe that you've sent me." Rather much, if not most, of the gospel message that people will hear and respond to, and this is historically true, I think you'll find, Much, if not most, of the gospel message that people will hear and respond to will be spoken by the people of God, by you and me, who have a godly love for the brethren. I'll just quote to you John 13 and verse 35. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. But it begins with each of us yielding to God and becoming one with God and Jesus Christ. That's where we begin. So how will the world know of our godly relationships? What does this have to do with the work of God, of spreading the gospel message? How will the world know? How will the world know that you and I have these godly relationships amongst us in the church? How will they be able to see that? I believe, brethren, if you look at it, you will find that when the church grows in numbers, and it has grown tremendously in years past, and when you find that when the church grows in numbers, it is mostly, and I think this will be statistically, stand up, it is mostly as a result of friends or family members who come in to the church as a result of the brethren, of things that they see in their lives. It's mostly a result of friends or family members or the brethren that have come in. Over the years, I think statistically you will find that the majority of our growth has come from family members, friends, co-workers who have been affected by the lives of the brethren, who've seen their examples, who've seen their lives change, and they wanted to know what it was all about. Yes, the program, the TV program, the internet, the magazine, all of these things come into play. But I think the majority of the growth in the Church of God over the years, until the bottom fell out and things began to fracture and scatter to the four winds, most of the growth in the church has come from the brethren, from their examples, family, friends, co-workers, other people who saw something different about them, and they asked and they found out, this was what changed your life, and they want a piece of it. As the scripture said, by this shall all men know, by your examples, by the God relationships we will with each other, by this shall all men know. I wondered about that often. How will all men know? Why will they care? That you, if you are my disciples, if you have love one for the other, how will the world know? Well, that's one way. They'll see your example. They'll see God in you. People see and pick up on things in a way that we might not realize. In the work environment, at home, and other places. So we need to be examples of a already built godly relationship. We need to be the examples of an already built godly relationship to those who walk through the door that may come as a result of our examples. Or who may be intrigued with the telecast or the magazine or some other, something they found on the internet that they happen upon. We need to be good examples of godly relationships that have already been built and who are in the process of improving as people walk through the door. And hopefully they will do that when God sees fit that we are ready to receive new people. What will they find when they get here? Will they find mentors who are ready and willing and able to teach? Will they find mentors who can teach and be examples of godly relationships? Or they will see people who are barely here themselves. Now, I think, in fairness, the group we have in here are seasoned enough that we are firm and strong in the truth and firm and strong in God's way of life, and we're not going to be shaken, I don't think, by much of anything. Ferris, I appreciate the sermon he gave this morning, or the first message this morning that talked about some of the things that are going to happen. And boy, am I glad, and I know you are too, that God is our strength and our refuge. That we have that strength and the refuge of God to, first of all, help us to be afraid of what may be coming in the near future or distant future, whichever the case may be, and to help us through those things. He talked about even if we are, you know, taken to some place of safety that we find safe, you know, knowing what's happening back wherever we were taken from, that's going to be a lot of anxiety as well. That's going to be worse a lot of times than we go through it ourselves. So hopefully God will in somehow or some way work that out. I have talked many times and made this the expression, it may not be the right frame of mind or the right attitude to have, but I just assume my place of safety would be 6 feet under, so I won't know all those things that are going on. But that's way off the beaten path here. That's way off the point. I don't know how I got off on that. But will they find, when people learn of us, will they come in to a group here where they can find mentors who will help them along? Will they find people who are steadfast in the truth? Will they find people who are holding firm to biblical doctrines that we've been taught? Will they be firm in Sabbath and holy day observance? You know, what if someone comes in who's having difficulty with the Sabbath? Maybe they had to take off work that day under the threat of being fired to attend the Sabbath, and they find someone in here that's this would not happen with anybody in here, but we'll find someone in here who will, maybe next Sabbath they'll work an extra hour or two on the Sabbath just to appease, you know, an employer. Now, if they find that out, how is that going to affect their relationship with God? Well, if God's people, these are God's people, and they're, letting down, they are compromising with those things, what kind of example is that going to make for them? Brethren, one of the concerns I have as we look around at this world of evil, Ferris was talking something about that too, how evil the world has become. One of the things and one of the concerns I have is that we will begin to bring a spirit of compromise back into God's church. Hopefully that will not happen, but we're always under the influence of the spirit of compromise. We're always under the influence of the spirit of deception. It's always out there. Not that we're not necessarily be always under the influence of it, but it's there, and we can fall under the influence of it. It's easy to say why, you know, compromise on basic values that we have. I am concerned that as we begin to bring a spirit of compromise, that we will begin to bring a spirit of compromise into the church if it's not already here. Again, I don't think it's here within our little fellowship here. But it's possible, something we need to be aware of and alert about. So, brethren, if part of our mission is to build godly relationships, we cannot neglect our most important relationship, that is our relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. That is our starting point. We cannot compromise on God's law. We can't compromise on His commands. And that is our starting point. I sat down and I wrote out a few things that I thought were points that we should recognize and keep in our minds. I wrote down a couple of points here that I thought was, and you could probably think of many, many more. I thought a couple of points, 4 points entirely, but I have 2 on relationship builders and I have 2 on relationship destroyers. And as I thought about it, I'd sort of boil the things down to 2 points. These could be expanded into many, many other points. But number one, the number one under the category of relationship builders is that we need to pray for each other. I'll just quote to you James 5 and verse 16, where it talks about the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Our prayer for others is essential. Praying for each other, bringing everyone's name in this congregation up to the throne of God every week. Being aware of people's needs and being aware of their difficulties, being aware of what they're going through, and whether it's health problems, financial problems, whatever it might be. It's just a tremendous, I know people have told me that they pray for me every week, and that's a tremendous encouragement. I wish I could be honest with you and tell you that I mention everybody's name in here, and those who are usually with us who are not here, I wish I could tell you that I mention their name to God every week, but I don't. I think I get around to everybody in a period of a couple of weeks' time, maybe. But we need to bring each other's names and each other's needs and each other's desires and each other's difficulties and problems before God's throne regularly by name. Not just bless the brethren. Well, no, it needs to be beaten more fine than that. It needs to be bringing some detail to God. God knows what their needs are. He knows what our needs are. But a prayer for others also has a positive effect on our own hearts. That's probably the biggest benefit that we get from prayers for others, is how it affects us and how it affects our own spirit. So keep that in mind. Pray for each other regularly, if not daily, and bring the individual names of the people. I am terrible at remembering people and remembering names, but if you want to know how I go about it, we've talked about this before. Everybody sits in the very same place every day, every Sabbath. So all I've got to do is close my eyes, and my mind, I know Gerald sits here, Gene sits here, Don sits here when he's here. And you can get through the whole crowd that way, and you know, and through the period of a, you know, 45-minute time span or something. And you know something about everybody in here. I'm sure you do, and I do. I'm speaking about this to myself as much as anyone else, because I am. This is something that I need worse than probably most of you do. A reminder, we need to pray for each other. Keep each other in mind. The second point of this, and like these are very broad points that could be beaten fine down to probably 20 points each. But the second point I wrote down on relationship builders is to support each other. When we are at services or when we've at other times, in addition to praying, we need to listen to each other. There are times when we can tell, the Spirit will tell us that someone is in need of just somebody listening to something that's happened to them this week, listening to what they're going through, listening to, you know, a lot of people, we all just sometimes need to unburden ourselves with things. And that's one reason we're here, for each other. To be someone, a sounding board, someone that we can, you know, someone can unburden themselves to. We need to listen and take time with people and not dismiss people. You know, that's happened to me before, and I've probably done it before myself. Just go up to speak to somebody and they're, of course, there's a reason for this. You know, people's minds are 1,000 miles away, and you know, you say a few words and they're dismissive and they go on and do their own thing. And perhaps it's usually because people are busy, they've got things on their own minds, but we need to, when we get here, we need to be willing to listen to people. And I found out, and it's taken me a long time to find out, that a lot of people, and this is particularly true with the ladies, men, this is a hard lesson to remember and to learn. Ladies, a lot of times, just want you to listen, not to fix. Ladies don't always want us to fix things, and that's the way, you know, we are. It helps just to talk about things and unburden ourselves about things. Even if the other person doesn't have the answer to your problem, we just need to unburden ourselves sometimes. And so we need to be willing to do that. We need to be willing to listen to each other. And if you've got helpful advice, you know, give it. But don't necessarily try to solve everybody's problems. A lot of times all they need is a heart that's willing to listen. So don't dismiss people. Jotted down a couple of scriptures that would be appropriate to read here. Ephesians 4. Ephesians chapter 4. Paul was very, very good at this. He had a heart that was really turned towards the brethren. He had a lot of love for the brethren. And you can tell that in his writings. He's very, corrective in some cases, but he always balanced that correction with a lot of encouragement and a lot of love and support. Ephesians 4, verse 1. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing with one another in love. That bearing with. The old King James, I think, says forbearing, and it actually just literally means just putting up with people. being patient with people. Bearing with one another in love. Endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. It is that Spirit of God that is in each of us that gives us and makes the ability, gives us the ability to build godly relationships. Philippians 2. Philippians 2. In verse 1, therefore, if there is any consolation in Christ, Philippians 2 and verse 1, if any comfort of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and mercy, the fellowship of the Spirit, that's what we're talking about. Godly relationships, the relationships that are born out of, first, a relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. And then as His Spirit permeates each of us, we're joined in spirit and have that type of relationship. He says, verse 2, fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord and one mind. How can we do that without God's Spirit working in each of our lives? Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. That's a pretty tall order, isn't it? Especially for those in the world, because that is what motivates most of the world, selfish ambition or conceit. But he goes on to say, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Be a serving individual that Christ talked about. We've talked about it many, many times. It's just imprinted in my mind there in John 13 at that Passover, that last Passover, when he got up and washed the disciples' feet. And he showed them not only a ritual that we do here at Passover, he showed them a whole new way of life, a life that we need to emulate as well. Let each esteem others better than himself. And let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. So we need to support each other and look out for each other. Be listeners, be good listeners, be compassionate towards one another. Probably and sometimes even corrective to one another when we see someone going off on the wrong path, but in a loving way. So those are two very, very extremely broad points that I wanted to bring to you as far as relationship builders are concerned. You could break those down into probably, no man telling how many dozens of individual tiny little points. But I'm bringing you today just the broadest concepts. Let's go to relationship destroyers. And I thought about this for a long time. And the number one on my list that I kept coming back to, a relationship destroyers, is gossip. That's a terrible problem in society in general, and there's a terrible problem sometimes in the Church of God as well. You know, there are TV programs that are devoted to gossip. There are websites, thousands of websites devoted to the gossip when you want to hear the latest gossip about some celebrity or political person. Social media is devoted a lot to gossip. So it just permeates the whole world. It shouldn't be brought into the Church of God. Gossip. Let's turn back over to James. We're going to James a lot today when you're talking to gossip, about a loose tongue, then James is the authority to go to. James 3. And I'll just drop down and catch some of the last of this. James 3 and verse 8. He talks about talking about the tongue, he said, "No man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God." A person who does that, who blesses God and then gossips and then curse people, is not of the Spirit of God. "Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not be so." Well, of course. "Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh." So, if we are living by virtue of the prompting of the Holy Spirit, then we will not be involved in gossip. And we will be able to stop ourselves when we catch that we are involved in gossip. It's a plague on the world, and sadly, at times in the Church of God. I have gossiped. I don't think that's any shock to any of you. And I have been the object and the subject of gossip a couple of different occasions that it's gotten back to me. And it's strange that, you know, it happens, and it's not anything that I'm terribly concerned about. This was, you know, not anything recently. But the odd thing is, the subject of gossip and what the gossip was about was actually entirely, completely 180 degrees opposite of what the truth was. So it's a good way to spread a lie is to spread gossip, because it changes from person to person to person to person. Not a good idea. Gossip is of the flesh, and gossip is not of the Spirit. It destroys relationships. It can restore relationships. So that was the point number one on a relationship destroyer. Point number two, under the category of relationship destroyer, is actually the opposite of the point number two under relationship builders. Relationship builders, point number two, was to support each other. The point under God, or a relationship destroyers, point number two, is neglect. Neglect. We can neglect. Well, it just occurred to me, we can neglect our relationship with God. We can, first of all, neglect our relationship with God, which will result in our neglecting relationships with the brethren. You know, it's a synergy that just works together, that cannot be broken. And this is the opposite of being supportive. Neglect. We cannot neglect God and our relationship with God and then expect to be supportive and not neglect the brethren. If we know people have needs, are we attentive to those needs? I say this to shame. It just occurred to me that as I look toward the back about neglect and about supporting each other, this has been the third week in a row, the second week in a row that I have not done what I said I was going to do and call Mrs. Bobby Mitchell. I've talked to her one time since the feast. And that is to my shame, because I should be calling her and talking to her and finding out what her condition is and what's going on in her life, because I'm sure she feels isolated. And I'm going to correct that. But anyway, that was a side issue. If we know people have needs, are we attentive to those needs? Turn over to Matthew 25. This is very, very sobering when talking about this subject. Matthew 25. So see, the God's Spirit has convicted me in something in this little talk today as well about not neglecting people. Matthew 25, and beginning in verse 31. "When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all His holy angels with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory. All the nations will be gathered before Him. And He will separate them one from another as a shepherd divides the sheep from the goats." You understand this is a parable, so it's compacting actual truthful events that will happen, but it's, you know, not exactly in order, if you know what I mean. "He will set the sheep on His right hand and the goats on His left. Then the king will say to those on His right hand, 'Come, you blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for You from the foundation of the world.' Notice what He says, 'For I was hungry and You gave Me food. I was thirsty and You gave Me drink. I was a stranger and You took Me in.'" Now, you could apply all of these things that he talks about here in a physical way to a spiritual way as well. Now, there's needs that we have physically, but there's probably more than that, more needs that we have spiritually, emotionally. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer. Notice this. This was not something, the righteous doesn't keep score of the things that he does. Notice what he says. When did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and gave you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Well, they didn't realize when they did those things out of their nature. Then what he says here, notice what he says. Or when did we see you sick and in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. So God, the Father, and Jesus Christ take it personally how we treat each other. He's not to look down and say, you shouldn't have treated that person that way. He's thinking, you treated me that way as well. God takes it personally how we treat one another. Or when did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. Then he will also say from those on his left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take me in, naked, and you did not clothe me, sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they also will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick and in prison and did not minister to you? Then he will answer and say to them, saying, surely I say to you, inasmuch as you did it not to the least of these, you did it not to me. And these will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. Sobering words from Jesus Christ about how we treat one another. Are we supportive of one another, or are we neglecting one another? It would be a relationship story. Let me put this, apply this in there too. When we know if people have needs, we need to be attentive to those needs. But on the other hand, this is another but. But on the other hand, it would also be a relationship destroyer for someone to take advantage of that, if you know what I mean. And it's happened in the past. To take an unfair advantage of a godly person who wishes to help doesn't need to be taken advantage of. I can remember in the past an individual who, boy, she had the deacons in the church running day and night doing things. You know, that she could have been done for. She could have done for herself. She could have called a family member, but because they thought they had to do it every time and be there every time, this person kept them running day and night, neglecting their own needs to do things that this other person needed doing because this person thought, she could call on anybody to do anything at any time. Now, that's the person who is taking advantage of someone's good nature, and that shouldn't be the case either. That is just as big a destroyer of relationships as neglecting someone. So, brethren, building godly relationships starts with our right relationship with God. It starts with obedience to His laws and His commands. A godly relationship requires that we have a healthy amount of fear and respect and awe for God. It's not all just, good thoughts and happy thoughts, and like the world looks at God and looks at Jesus as just, it's just all happy thoughts, all good thoughts, all positive thoughts. There's some hard work that's involved in it. And building godly relationships start with our right relationship with God. It starts with obedience to His laws and His commands, which is hard work sometimes. It starts with upholding the truth and standing firm in observance of our doctrine that God has given us. It starts with upholding the truth and standing firm in our observance of doctrine. Not going soft on Sabbath observance, holy day observance, going soft on pagan holiday observance, and those type of things. It starts with prayer, fasting, study, and meditating on God's way. Building a God relationship with others has to start with a real relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. It's not just a slogan, brethren. It's a way of life.